when you do anything in this world of you know, Facebook posts and Twitter and Pinterest and Instagram, whatever, what's the reason for doing it? You've really got to think, you know, what are you hoping to achieve here? Are you just hoping to achieve more noise? Are you targeting something different? Are you targeting something that you're missing out on through the other social networks? You know, if you're going to end up just cannibalizing and, as you say, thinning out and spreading your stuff too thin amongst existing people, exactly right. Why would you want to spread your content on Facebook so thin across other platforms that you just lose people?
Ladies and gentlemen, the next event on the card is a heavyweight marketing bout for the small to medium business owner. In the red corner, from Paradise, Australia, is David. And in the blue corner, from an English paradise, is David.
Hi there, how are you doing? Welcome along to David versus David, the podcast for the small to medium-sized business owner. We're going to talk about everything from advertising to keeping your business on track, because that's what we like to talk about here at David versus David. I'm David Council from beautiful Paradise, Hobart, Tasmania, and my partner in, well, let's say crime, also strangely called David. It's David Pritchard from the UK. G'day, mate. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thanks very much, David. Yeah, partner in crime. Yeah, I know, but hopefully there's no criminal activity going on here. It's all good stuff. We're giving you the good advice, the things you ought to be thinking about and doing to improve your business and stuff, and little nuggets here and there, but all legit stuff.
Where does that phrase come from, partner in crime? Is that an old Batman reference?
Probably. Yeah, we'll look that one up. Little phrases like that intrigue me from time to time. Like, where did that one come from? What's that about then? And then sometimes you look into these things and yeah, some of them are boring as crap. Some of them are really interesting. So, hey-ho, what good stuff are we going to talk about this week? What gold nuggets are we going to drop into the conversation?
Well, how about today we go back and answer a few of the questions that have come through from listeners. And we've had a lot to do with social media. Now, based on previous experience, when we say it's going to be a Q&A, don't get too excited. It's not like we're going to get through 20 questions here. We've got a lot of them lined up, but there's a really good chance that we'll get through three or four.
Yeah. Hey, David, when you kick off the introduction on this, you well, we both do it, but you talk about the podcast for the small and medium-sized business owner. You know, we're not referring to height there. Obviously, we're referring to the size of the business, the kind of people that this is aimed at and so on. And I think, you know, it's fair to say, you know, larger enterprises, they may well have people, at departments even, that specifically look at things like social media. But I find it's one of the things that the small and medium-sized businesses probably have more issues with than anything. Sometimes, you know, they've got business plans, they've got ideas about what they're doing, the promotional stuff, and they get their print advertising and so on and so on. But social media is quite often one of the things that sort of scares them more than anything. And different reasons, familiarity with the technology and just background and stuff, and time. Time is a common one. So they quite often know that they ought to be doing stuff, or so they're told, but, you know, they dabble at best. They make some effort, but they don't really get to grips with it, or they do the wrong kind of things, and that's what they're afraid of more than anything. Comments not just from our listeners, but, you know, people I talk to, I get this kind of feedback quite a lot. And in fact, the first question we have from Steve here kind of highlights this in quite a good way. His comment was, and it took me, I remember years ago, it took me a little while to twig this a little bit, but he comments, I've got hundreds of people that like my page, so why don't all the people who like my page see my posts? When you put a post up there, it says, you know, this post was seen by 220 people, yet you know you've got 1,200 people like your page. So, you know, What's going on here? Why does it vary so much? I mean, one post is seen by 200 people, the next post is seen by 700 people, the next post is seen by 85 or something like that. So, you know, what's going on, really? That's his question.
Well, I suppose there's a couple of things that are in play here. It's not like a library book where everybody who takes the book out gets to see the whole lot. Facebook has an algorithm that's operating, for example, in background, and I'm just picking Facebook out because it's possibly the best known of the social media. And at the end of the day, Facebook wants you to pay to see information. So if you're a business sharing information, I think at the moment the algorithm shows your post to between 5% and 25% of people who have liked your page, depending on a couple of things. For example, if as soon as it posts, lots of people like it, that affects the algorithm. So if your post is up for hours and hours and hours before people get to it and start liking it, that does affect how many people get to see it. How many comments go onto that post. So Facebook wants people to be interacting with the information. It's not just, you know, a series of flashcards that are going up that people go, oh, that's nice, and then move on. They want that interaction. And they also want you to be sharing it so that you're involved with that conversation as well. So you've got to be sharing it with your friends. So, and each of these things carry a different weight in the algorithm.
Yeah.
You know, if you like to think of it in its most basic form, a like is worth one on the weight scale, a comment is worth two, and sharing it is worth three. You know, so obviously, you know, the more shares you get, the more important that it is. But, you know, into all of that is factored time. You know, how long has that been up on the timeline with people liking it? And you know, it's not just a short-term thing. For example, we've all seen posts come up in our Facebook timeline that says, you know, Billy Blogs likes a post from April 11, 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still rolling around. So if people are still interacting with it, then Facebook gives that weight as well. But if you've got a post that goes up and pretty much everyone ignores it for a few hours, then Facebook goes, well, you know what? It's coming up in people's timeline. They're not really interacting with it. Maybe it's not a cool and hip thing. So it ranks it down and it starts to show it to less people. So, you know, your initial load might be that on your Facebook page, for example, it might be that 83 number that David said. And, you know, don't get me wrong, 83 is not a real number. It's just, you know, 83 people might have seen it. And then Facebook might have gone, well, you know, it's not really catching on, so now we're going to ramp it back. And those 83 people might have represented anywhere from 5 to, you know, say 12% of the people that are friends with your particular page.
Yeah.
So it really is a genuine calculation, as opposed to, say, Twitter, whereby you can post something and everybody that likes your Twitter feed sees it. You put a hashtag against it and anybody that's following that hashtag gets to see it. So it's different from Facebook in that it's trying to show it to as many people as you can possibly reach out to. And that's not to say that won't change in Twitter, but that's the way it is at the moment. It's really the hashtags that are driving you to a broader audience group than just the people who follow your page.
Yeah.
So if you've got 300 people who like your Twitter handle, then it'll show up in the timeline, the feed of that Twitter page. But that's not to say that everyone will genuinely see it, because not everyone scrolls through their whole Twitter feed for the day. I mean, I know people who would have thousands and thousands of tweets come up in their Twitter feed.
You'd spend all day just doing that, which is, I'm sure, one or two teenagers seem to do for sure. But but yeah, everybody else that's got work and things to fit in around looking at Twitter and Facebook and stuff, yeah, they don't have time, which I guess is also, you know, partly why Facebook do what they do. If they showed every post, bearing in mind that there's typically more content on a Facebook post, you know, with videos and photos and stuff like that, you would clutter up somebody's feed enormously. By doing what they're doing, I mean, obviously, that they're holding stuff in reserve so that you're more tempted to spend money promoting posts and promoting your page and stuff. But they are also providing, to some degree, a better user experience. Now, you want people to like your post as quickly as possible. You want as many people to like your post. You want as many people to comment on your post. You want as many people to share your post that you put up there. There are things you can do to improve that engagement. And, you know, something I see quite often, particularly small businesses that aren't terribly adept at this kind of thing, is, oh, we've got a company Facebook page now. Let's tell people what we've got for sale. You know, so they put a product up there. This is a great product for such and such. You know, and the next post is, this is another great product for such and such. And the next post is, and that's just boring, and is really probably going to switch off most of your people, so that, you know, A, they're not going to like it, B, they're not going to comment on it, and they're sure as hell not going to share it, because it just looks a bit spammy. Mm. So, you know, the things that you need to be doing are putting interesting stuff on there, and it can be short, you know, particularly if it's text-based stuff. You know, a post of, I don't know, 15 to 30 words is, if it's good, you know, a text-based post can be quite short, can be quite interesting. Ask a question, you know, do something that encourages engagement, but not just about your product. It can be something about the marketplace. It can be some tangent about what you do and so on. So you'll get more engagement from shorter posts typically than longer posts. And, you know, that's maybe a rule of thumb. But of course, there's always exceptions to that. If you've got a longer post that is really interesting, that's a little bit controversial, that's going to generate comment, that can work well as well. You've obviously got things like photos and videos. You know, if you've got some interesting photos, people love photos. All sorts of photos, even the photos you think are kind of poor quality, or, you know, something not right in them, point out what's not right in it. You know, if as long as it sort of stands up on some front, on some basis, you can make use of that. You can do things that intrigue people. People want to find out more. They'll click on the photo. That kind of thing. And people will comment on photos and, you know, comment back. When somebody's made a comment, don't just leave it hanging there. You know, take them to the next level, say something a little bit more. So, you know, people, other people, their friends will see in their side of their timeline that you know, Bill commented on Sarah's photo, blah, blah, blah. And then Sarah's made another comment back and Bill's made another comment back. Well, hey, let's find out what's going on here. And, you know, people are intrigued to see what other people are doing. So you do that increasing engagement and stuff. And the same with videos, you know, so it's it can work well. But if you just put blatant promotional stuff, one thing after another, after another, it's not going to work that well. You know, you ought to be probably looking at 1 in 5, 1 in 10 of your posts are about your business and what you have for sale, maybe. You know, that people do appreciate that you're there for a reason, and that you're not just necessarily posting stuff on Facebook because you enjoy doing it all the time, although if you do, you will benefit. But, you know, they will accept a little bit, but they don't want bang, post, all about your business, one after another, after another. So, yeah, just bear that in mind.
It's also worth mentioning, David, because you're talking about pictures and video there, that Facebook, in their algorithm, rank up people who embed the video or import the video into their Facebook page, as opposed to linking out to YouTube. Because, you know, I suppose Facebook and Google are really in a type of battle here, because you've got to remember that Google owns Google Plus. So they're in this sort of battle whereby Facebook says, right, well, if you've put that video on YouTube, we are going to show that to more people.
Yeah.
If you link to Google, not so much. So you've really got to work out then what's more beneficial for you, because obviously putting a video into YouTube, and that helps you with your Google search engine optimization. So don't be afraid to put it into YouTube and also upload it to Facebook. Is it going to take you more time? Yeah, of course it's going to take you more time, but, you know, it's going to help you get found, and that's what you're trying to do by doing this sort of stuff anyway.
Yep, indeed. And I mean, there's nothing to stop you embedding it on your own website, and from Facebook, you know, direct Facebook, you can link it straight to your own website rather than the YouTube or whatever. So you kind of get the best of both there. You're directing, because ultimately, you know, the point of having a Facebook page is to build an asset of people that like and interact with your business. And you bear in mind all the time with something like Facebook, you are building it on somebody else. That asset is being built on somebody else's, i.e. Facebook's platform. You know, one day in the future, if the only people that inhabit Facebook are, let's be silly about this, but you know, Facebook loses its appeal to anybody over the age of 19, then your market is going to be 19-year-olds, and you've built a whole engagement and interaction and fan base that's probably not looked at anything on Facebook for like a year or something. That's not going to do you a lot of good. But if you're building your own website, if you're encouraging people to come to your website, and if you, as a result of them visiting your website, they're going on an email newsletter or some other kind of email capture, then you're building your own asset, which is all yours. So just bear in mind, you know, if you go back 10 years even, if you'd done the same, put all the effort into something like MySpace or Bebo or one of the other platforms, you know, they barely exist now. They're certainly not the number one or two leaders that they were in those days. You never know what might happen to Facebook. It's unlikely it's going to be fall off a cliff anytime soon. But just bear in mind what you're doing. So ultimately, you want to be thinking about Facebook as a really good and interesting way that people like engaging with you, and you want them to come to you and build your own asset rather than just Facebook asset. But it's a means to an end, and a very, very powerful and useful means to an end. Just bear that in mind, really.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Gee whiz, David. That's only, how long have we been going here? Oh, just over a quarter of an hour. And that's one question answered.
Yeah, indeed. Follow on from that, actually, not Steve here, but people have asked me, should I pay to boost posts? They see this thing that says boost this post, and there are so many dollars, and you know, you extend the reach of it. And my answer to that is, yeah, that can be really worthwhile doing, actually, for a really pretty small cost. But don't do it blind. Facebook provides this thing called Insights, and Insights is a bit like Google Analytics, which you may be familiar with, where you can see how many people have interacted with your site, where they've been, what they've done, and so on. Insights is a bit like that. It gives you the information on each post that you've published, how many people it reached on its own merits. If you boost the post by paying for it, it will also add how many additional people it reached because you paid for it. Again, how many people engaged with it and so on, how many people liked your page as a result of your payment. If you're boosting a post for, I don't know, maybe it costs you $10 or $5 or whatever, and as a result of doing that, it goes out, it reaches another 2,000 people, say, whatever, and 20 of those people think it's such good content that they end up liking your page, you know, you may well deem that to be well worth it. So, you know, but if you're paying money and nobody else is reaching a lot more people, but nobody else is engaging with it, nobody else is liking your page as a result, then you want to pay, maybe think twice about whether you have the right kind of content. And it gives you an opportunity to experiment with content to some degree as well, actually. So, you know, you can find out what resonates with your market. So if you have a page, look for the Insights page, the tab there that will tell you about likes, reach, what's the other one, visits, posts, and there's a couple of others in there as well. It's all good information. So pay your money, boost your posts. It's not gonna break the bank, but just make sure that you actually get, you know, analyze the results. Otherwise, you're just spending money and hoping for the best, and hoping for the best never really works out that well. So I know what I'd rather do. Check the results, see what you're getting for it. Okay, David. That's Steve. Steve was a good guy because he came up with another question, a follow-on one from this, which is also, I think, a nice one to answer. I can tell what's going to happen here, Dave. You know, when we do this kind of thing, we say we've got 20 questions here, or as we've learned, you know, we've got five questions here, and we say we hope to answer them all. Well, we've done one, and I reckon we're going to get another one done. We're probably going to hit a world record low of a two-question and answer session. So anyway, his follow-on question relates to, you mentioned it in the previous answer, Google Plus. What is Google Plus exactly, and is it worthwhile spending any time on it?
You know, I think the Google Plus is Google going, bloody hell, Facebook's a good idea. Wish we'd thought of that.
They've not done that before, have they?
No, that's right. Well, hey, you don't have to be first. You know, as we've discussed under the 22 rules of immutable, you know, you don't have to be first. You know, you just have to be better.
Yeah.
And, hey, once again, look at all of the stuff that is in the iPhone. Most of that Apple wasn't first with. They were just better. All right, so what is Google Plus? Google Plus is Google's version of Facebook, I suppose, to be in its most simplistic form. It's a social media that comes out of the Google universe, which makes it sound like now we're talking about the Marvel universe. But it's a way of socially interacting using this Google platform. It's different from Facebook, and yet the same. At the same time, is it worth spending any time on it? Look, I would definitely register my information with Google Plus. I would set up a Google Plus account. But if if you don't have a lot of people that you know who are using it and your customers don't use it, I think you would use it then from an SEO point of view, but wouldn't spend bags and bags of time on it because, you know, the SEO value out of it is only as good as the interaction that you're getting with it, because Google is still looking at it and going, well, this guy put up a comment and no one commented.
Yeah.
You know, or this guy's circle, because that's the way that Google Plus works. It has, you know, circles of friends, you know, has no one in it. Or the only person that is the friend of this person is their mum. Yeah. Or for that matter, you know, 40 other Google Plus avatars that aren't actually active as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so don't get the impression that Google doesn't know that all of these other avatars aren't active. They know exactly who's active and who's not. So I've got a Google Plus account. I'm assuming you've got one,
David. Yeah, indeed.
I don't really use mine very much. I post stuff into it, but, you know, as I said, really only from an SEO point of view, because I don't really know anyone who uses it.
But I've set one up for a couple of businesses. I use one of them. I don't particularly use the others. Yeah, like I say, typically, you know, it's used to give some links. If Google's going to go anywhere and uncover links to a new website, it's going to have a look at Google Plus. If it stumbles across a link back to a site, you know, that's kind of good. Like I say, it's for the SEO benefit that I tend to use them. Steve's comment, actually, appendage on his question was, no one I know seems to use it or know much about it. In our world of working in internet marketing and stuff, you know, we do know about it. And it can become very easy to say, well, we know about it, so therefore everybody else must know about it. You know, don't be myopic on this. But, you know, if you go in any social environment with friends and people who maybe run a business, say, do you know what Google Plus is? And they'll say, oh, that's Gmail or that's Google Ads. Basically, no is the answer. They don't really know what Google Plus is. If you live and work in tech circles, then fair enough. You know, you're going to get a different answer. But if you run a small business that deals with the general public, it's going to be a bit limited. That's not to say don't use it, as David has said here, but perhaps it's not worth spending the same amount of time. If have a play, see what happens. But if you've done some stuff and, you know, people aren't engaging with you, you've invited lots of people to join your Google Plus circles and stuff, and nobody does, or the people that do, you know, the first 50 or 100 or 200 that do that kind of thing don't really engage with you, then, well, you've got to think, yeah, focus your efforts where you get the better results from for the time being, because as David said there, you know, Google is a behemoth that wants to rule the universe of information and how people use it. So as he says, they're in a battle with Facebook over the long term, and you know, this is their way of doing it. But they've done, you know, to be fair, they've done stuff in the past. If you remember Google Wave, David, about 5 years ago, that was kind of one of their preliminary attempts, perhaps, at social media. Well, that got canned about 2 years ago, perhaps, something like that.
I suppose, just for Steve's benefit, it's like, well, what about having a MySpace account?
Ooh.
You know, how many people say to you, do you have a MySpace account? Now, MySpace was pretty big.
It was.
You know, before Facebook rolled over the top of it. So, you know, if you would say, no, I don't need a MySpace account, then, you know, you probably need a MySpace account as much as you need a Google Plus account. It's just that it has the advantage of being part of the Google universe and therefore having a bit more strength to it.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, well, we've got a third question here, which is kind of on a similar kind of tack, really, from Michelle, which is, do any other social networks provide much benefit, or should I focus on Twitter and Facebook only? What about things like LinkedIn and Pinterest and so on? You know, that's an interesting question. It's quite interesting to see how things have changed, actually. Everybody's got a friend or knows somebody that had the idea for Facebook before Facebook. I actually did have a friend who had a great idea for a graphically image-orientated social network site about in 2007, which he never took any further. And when Pinterest came out, he said, damn it, I knew there was a market for something like that. But fair enough, he did. I'll give him his credit on that one. He did actually mention it to me years before I saw Pinterest.
If only he'd had $7 million worth of startup money, he could have owned it.
Absolutely. That's all you need, guys. You know, that idea you've had in your bedroom, you know, to take you that far. But anyway, you know, Pinterest, that's an interesting one. I think it depends very much on what your market is, what your target market is, what your products are and so on. If you have if you have visually interesting stuff, and I think it's also, I don't want to be wrong in saying this, but I think also Pinterest, does it have a higher female demographic,
yes.
David?
Yeah, it definitely does.
I think it does, yeah. Doesn't it? You know, so, you know, I want to be PC here about this, but, you know, basically if your market is...
Women.
perhaps fashion, women, shoes, handbag. I don't want to be sexist about this. It appeals to other things as well. But if you've got something that's graphically orientated, that's visually appealing and so on and so on, then Pinterest is probably going to be something that works quite well for you. I have a separate business, which is pet accessories. And again, you know, that works really well, actually. We post a lot of stuff on Pinterest. I have a friend who runs a huge jewellery import business and accessories. Now they do hair accessories, tattoo, you know, the peel off tattoos and that kind of thing, and bangles, jewellery, earrings, all sorts of stuff. Again, hugely, they just put everything they do on Pinterest because it gets picked up. And again, when you make a Pinterest board and put your images on there and stuff, you can have links coming back to your website. And particular product pages and stuff. So always remember to maintain a specific focus. So if you've got an image on Pinterest with a description underneath about it, say about earrings, take it back to your earrings page, you know, the actual product page on your website about earrings. Don't just take it back to your homepage. So you can keep people's interest aligned with what they're actually interested in, certainly to start with.
I think that's Pinterest's advantage from a graphic point of view is that it allows you to dig a bit deeper, so you can place information behind the image as opposed to, say, an Instagram, which is purely about the image.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, with Pinterest, you can access Pinterest via your desktop computer as well as your mobile device.
Yeah.
Whereas Instagram is mobile only. You know, I have a client who is, I won't tell you exactly what they do, but they're in the fashion industry. They built up a tremendous Facebook following and then decided they also needed an Instagram following.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a really bad idea because they'd already created their community and all they were doing now is just thinning the herd out.
Yeah.
So they were taking the focus and spreading it across multiple areas that they didn't need to. Because they were already getting that visual representation through their Facebook account.
You know what, though? You just said something there that is fundamentally really important. When you do anything in this world of Facebook posts and Twitter and Pinterest and Instagram, whatever, what's the reason for doing it? You've really got to think, you know, what are you hoping to achieve here? Are you just hoping to achieve more noise?
Mm.
Are you targeting something different? Are you targeting something that you're missing out on through the other social networks? You know, if you're going to end up just cannibalizing and, as you say, thinning out and spreading your stuff too thin amongst existing people, exactly right. Why would you want to spread your content on Facebook so thin across other platforms that you just lose people? Have a strategy behind it. Work out, you know, what you're hoping to achieve and why, and that will tell you if it's worth it.
Yeah.
And a bit like LinkedIn, you know, LinkedIn is the...
Business-to-business
social network, mm-hmm. basically. This is who I am. It's a way of connecting to lots of people, and if you're hoping to promote yourself as the go-to guy in whatever field you are, amongst all your friends' connections, your business associates' connections, and so on, it's the 7 degrees of or 6 degrees of separation type thing. You know, you've got a business contact, he's got 200 business contacts, they've got 200 each, so you know, you spread yourself two or three layers deep, and you're promoting yourself all over the place. Perhaps, I don't know if you suffer this as well, but you get all sorts of contact requests from all sorts of people that I think it's changed over the years. Everybody's jumped on it to the point where it's perhaps diluted some of its effectiveness, in my opinion.
But
some people swear by it. It gets them into their local market quite neatly sometimes. And again, if you're prepared to spend the time and effort investing in that, and it's the right kind of avenue for you, then yeah, there's no reason why you shouldn't do it. It can be valuable.
Well, it's who is your customer. If you are in a business-to-business, then LinkedIn is good for you. If you're in business-to-customer, then Facebook is good for you. I'm in a business-to-business business, and you know, I get contacts every week coming to me from the groups that I'm part of in LinkedIn. So it gives me great contact with people that I would never get a chance to talk to otherwise. Whereas Facebook, you know, for me to use Facebook at its most efficient, what you've got to do is not just get to the broader spectrum of people. What you've got to do is get to the manager or the owner of that business, because it's still the same decision maker that you're trying to get through to.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, different tools, different businesses, different objectives. It's like I always say, who is your customer? What is your message? That tells you where you've got to be.
Okie dokie, Dave. I think we've covered three questions again. We made it to three.
Yeah, we have gone somewhat over time, but
yeah, but fair enough. Hopefully, we've covered some useful stuff there for small to medium sized business owner or small to medium sized business owners of. And yeah, hopefully, that's useful. Some good stuff in there. Think about what you're hoping to achieve from each one, particularly with things like Facebook. Realize that people want to, you know, will engage with interesting stuff. They won't engage with wildly self-promotional stuff. That's, you know, if all you do is self-promote, that's going to be a bit of a switch off. Think what you'd like to read through. You know, you want to read interesting stuff. You want to comment on interesting stuff. You want to comment and engage with stuff that stimulates you, that perhaps controversial, perhaps you have a viewpoint on it, and so on and so on. So bear that in mind when you go through all this. And really, it can become your friend, not something to be afraid of.
Yes.
I think at the end of the day, when you think about it. So anyway, if you want to send us any more questions, comment on our existing content or find our other content, we have a previous 70 episodes or so for you to dig in and have a look around. Then the website is www.davidversusdavid.com. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/davidversusdavid. And as ever, we always like iTunes reviews. You can find the other episodes there as well. Subscribe and get future episodes sent to you. Leave us a nice review if you go to iTunes, please. Always like that. But in the meantime, and until next week's episode, it's going to be, I think, over and out from me, David Pritchard, here in the UK.
And it's bye-bye from me here in paradise. Take care. See you next week.
You have just been listening to the David versus David podcast with David Pritchard and David Council, helping you get knockout results with your online marketing and advertising. Please keep in mind that the ideas, opinions, and information shared in the show are those of the hosts and do not reflect those of their past employers.